the same time, the Air Force had a problem. And the problem was the anticipated fighting over the channel. And if someone was shot down, got in the water with the best fabrics that they had, they died in 10 minutes in the winter. What they wanted was 30 to 40 minutes, and they could get an MTB out and pick them up right. and get them back. So the RAF was looking for this. And of course, in the Army Navy Club or what have you, there's always some boy talking,
sure.
dear boy, you know?
Yeah.
And so they discovered that this fabric was marvellous, exactly what they wanted, and there was a firm out in Willingon City that was making about 2,000 yards every now and again, which is quite useless.
Just as a hobby.
So they came out to Catamance, yeah. which is now Catamance,
yeah.
and they said, look, pack this up. You're not going to be able to produce enough fabric for us. Yeah. We've got people in the north of England called William Denby, and they are the biggest producers of rainwear in Britain. You make the material that you want. Is it very expensive? He said, well, it's a bit expensive. It's about 4 and 7 a pound. Old money. he was only making tuppence out
yeah.
of it. I mean, basically, it was very cheap.
Yeah.
He had all this casing that he wanted to move anyway. Made it, put it in casks, and they shipped loads of it up to Yorkshire to yeah. William Denby, and they produced. A number of pilots were saved during the Battle of Britain because of this.
Right.
And the product was actually mentioned as having been applied to the outer garments went up Everest for the first time.
Really?
If you look up the yep. book on the conquest yep. of Everest, it says Mystoline, Mystolene.
Right.
And this was how it all began okay. as a real firm, real production.
Okay.
Gordon Whiston was the sales manager. Dr. Higgins brought down from Yorkshire the man who had worked in his dye manufacturing firm called Arthur Waller. He was the works manager and effectively the senior executive under Higgins.
Right.
Higgins always said his salary was only $1,250 a year. That was true, but he also had $6,000 a year as a consultant, and he had 25% of the company, which paid dividends. When I became chairman managing director many years later, and my wife doesn't forgive me for this, but I always said I needed $400,000 a year to match what Higgins was taking out at that time.
Wow.
Well, he had a car,
yeah.
his wife had a car,
yeah.
he had a car chauffeur, of course.
Yeah.
His gardener and housekeeper were laboratory assistants. His ice wine and German great wines were obtained from Fortnum Mason as canteen supplies. I mean, to say that he was amazingly able to.
Yes, yes.
In those days, it was legal.
Yes.
See?
Yeah.
And not only legal, but they were so grateful
yeah, yeah.
that
yeah.
he had rescued this company and was churning money out
yeah.
and paying dividends to these 80 shareholders who had had nothing because everything would be lost.
Yeah.
The collapse of the Brockner's Wisdom in the late 30s, they went bankrupt. And here, if you like,
the savior, really.
Of the family,
yeah.
Gordon, yes. was looking after their interests and getting dividends paid. It was marvellous.
Yeah.
So whatever Higgins took was worthwhile.
Yeah.
Now, Higgins decided that he was interested in catamounts, and it became his toy. First of all, as a source of income. I don't think that really mattered to him. It was just the way he lived, you know, that was just it. But he was a great man, a great mind. And what he wanted to do was to make sure Catamounts did not grow beyond the point where it was comprehensible to him.
Right.
Where the quantities of product we made were between 5 tons and 250, maybe 300 tons, on the basis that less than 5 tons of dilettante, it was too going to cause a lot of trouble to do very little.
Yeah.
Over 5 tons, up to 200 tons, it would be very useful to the people who were buying from us, but not sufficient quantity for people like ICI, Claire, whatever, to come in and say, we'll make it.
Find your niche and stay there,
So they had a niche market.
Yeah.
And in that niche market, what were we going to produce? And he said, well, the sensible thing is, bring your problems to us and we will solve them. And if by solving them we have to recommend somebody else's product, we will. We'll charge you a small consultancy fee, but by and large, if we say, well, no, you need a special product, we will make it for you up to 200 tons or whatever a year.
Okay.
However, we will charge a market price, which was realistic for this operation. And that's what he did. During the war, things like the Mosquito, the aeroplane de Havilland's, the fabric had to be applied to wood. You know, it was a fabric and wood.
Yep.
He recommended the mixture of cellulose acetate and viscose and cotton that actually was used on the Mosquito, because he knew how fusible fabrics worked. The hose pipes used on the Thames, on the firefighting barges that they had, which acted as fire engines, but floating, rotted like mad. And the reason they rotted, they didn't know, but Higgins investigated this and found that a bacterium was taking the sulphur out of the sewage, in that human waste, obviously, and oxidizing that, converting it to sulfuric acid. So he produced a preservative on a very cunning idea that he had from 1915, which is simply explained, all life forms that we know have the simplest enzyme to break a fat. An ester linkage can be broken by almost every form of life because it's the principal store of energy. So what we will do, we take a poison and we link it to a fat, a fatty acid, join the two together in an ester linkage, then naughty bacterium or fungal or whatever comes along, breaks that ester linkage thinking it's food and releases the poison, cunning.
Very.
The simplest thing that formed an ester that could be toxic was phenol.
Right.
And if you want to make phenols more poisonous, more aggressive, you chlorinate. You put chlorine, a benzene ring, you know, the idea of six figure.
Yeah.
OH makes it a phenol.
Right.
And so you've got five places around it. Okay. You bung in chlorine, you've got pentachlorphenol.
Okay.
Very, very, very good antiseptic, very useful. Link that to fatty acid, and it forms a sort of oil or wax just on the border between oil and wax. And if you emulsify that, it's stable, it doesn't work, nothing happens. You can wash your hands in it, it's nothing.
Yeah.
It's like sodium chloride. You know, sodium or chlorine, and you'd be in real trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
But sodium chloride is not a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
However, as soon as you get it into a situation in which enzyme
break it down.
Lipase is produced, it's split. So he had this product. And this became part and parcel of the way Catamans developed in a small way during the war. And post-war, they had the showerproof, which was proofing combat uniforms. they produced a form which could be used by laundries to reproof fabrics,
right, yeah,
as long as they were salt washed before the days of detergent.
Yeah.
So they made a living, as they say, you know, for probably about 20, 25 employees just starting up. They acquired a factory in Bridge Road East, and everything was going along smoothly till the war ended.
Yeah.
And when the war ended, in his usual way, the government decided they weren't going to buy any more profit to Sherbrooke. What they wanted to do was get rid of
warehouses full
to 4 million men or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And there was an order for raincoats.
Yeah.
That they got. So they had a bit of business there. And they had to come up with ideas. One of the ideas, the first idea was to